I want to make it look realistic, like the real colours of fruit and veg. And the bowl itself is going to be, I think we're going to do like a white kind of finish. Yeah, it's so exciting.
So different from the last time you saw it, which
really
was pretty,
really
cool. It was all flat and 2D.
Yeah, it was just the fruit, flat and the table, so it's great. It looks so good.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it.
You're listening to Gretel Corry and Georgina Evans planning the last few steps of their collaborative work. It's a large fruit bowl that's decorated with clay cutouts in the shape of oranges, corn, pears, beetroot leaves.
I'm a very realistic person, so I love things the way they naturally are, so I don't think I will experiment with colour. I really want to make it a colourful bowl, but I definitely will stick to the nature of the fruit and vegetable colour.
Georgina and Gretel are working together on this piece for an upcoming exhibition that's taking place at the Design Centre in Enmore on the 28th of June. It's called For Art's Sake, and it's run by Participate Australia, an organisation that provides support for people living with intellectual, cognitive and developmental disabilities, as well as for their families and carers.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to someone having it in their house and being able to use it and, you know, remember where it's come from. Yeah, the story behind it.
Gretel Corry and Georgina Evans are both ceramicists. Georgina has been working with Gretel in her studio in Chippendale through the For Art's Sake program. I asked how the collaboration worked.
Our first meeting, we just sat down and kind of just discussed what our practices were, I suppose, and we picked out a bit of Georgina and a bit of mine to kind of see what could work together well. Mm. Yeah, there were a few sketches.
Yes, we did a few sketches.
A lot of tea, a lot of chatting.
Yes, that's a must.
Over the course of several meetings facilitated by Participate Australia, Georgina and Gretel have conceived and completed this piece that will compete for an art prize and be sold by silent auction at the exhibition. Georgina and Gretel's collaborative piece will sit alongside works donated to the exhibition by Australian artists including Ken Doan, Jodie Bruin and Reg Mombasa. Four prizes totalling $10,000 will be awarded on the night. I spoke to one of the judges about what it's like adjudicating at For Art's Sake.
My name's Colin Rhodes. I'm a member of Participate Australia and an art historian and an artist, and I've been particularly interested in art that is made, you know, outside the mainstream, if I can put it that way. And for quite a few years now, I've been closely involved with artists who are working with severe learning disabilities and artists with mental health issues.
Colin has been involved with For Art's Sake for several years. When he was the Dean of the Sydney College of the Arts, the exhibition was held on the campus in Rozelle. I asked Colin what inspires his interest in art that is outside the mainstream.
Okay, well, I've always believed that great works of art, good works of art, stand up on their own, whoever's made them. One of the things that got me interested in art that was being made by people who were in these sort of other groups in the first place was not that I thought the art was somehow kind of completely different to any other art that I'd seen, but that I was seeing some really good art, an art that wasn't able to find itself into the sort of the mainstream exhibition and dealer system and all the rest of it.
So what exactly are the barriers facing people with disability who want to make art?
There's still a kind of prejudice out there. You know, thankfully we live in a culture which is a lot more open and a lot more accepting and a lot more able to sort of see diversity and equity than perhaps it was 20, 30 years ago. But even now, there's this sort of presumption that certain things come from certain places. So if you're looking for a musician, then it's somebody who's either come through, you know, a conservatorium, music school, or, you know, they've trod the boards in the pubs to be a rock musician. We expect our artists to have been to art school and all that kind of stuff. There's also a really sort of social element, you know, to any kind of creative arts. I'm sure I don't have to tell you, you know, that besides doing what we do, as artists or musicians or actors or whatever, there's this kind of expectation that you engage and you do the social thing and you go to openings and, you know, you give radio interviews, you write and all this kind of thing. And one of the barriers that a lot of people in the sort of groups that are working in places like Participate, they're just not able to do that. But often visual language is their primary language. Now, if visual language is your primary language, you're not going to be great at writing artist statements. You're not going to be, you know, the life and soul of the conversation and opening and this sort of thing. And it's sort of, it's not a rule that's written down anywhere, but it's just kind of what's expected. So it's sort of two ways. You know, sometimes you get that sense of, oh, you know, we just don't really deal with these kind of groups. And on another, you might not even see these groups because they don't have the kind of equipment, if you like, to sort of force themselves through the door in the way that any young artist has to do. You know, I mean, it's no surprise really that, you know, you go to art school these days and a big part of the education is not only about how to be an artist, you know, a maker, it's also how to get your portfolio in front of people, how to get through the door, how to make a career. That's reasonable. It's fair enough. That's the way the game is. But if there are things about your intrinsic way of life and abilities that stop you doing that, then that's a barrier straight away. And it's a kind of, to the museums and the dealers and the galleries, it's kind of an invisible barrier. They just never see you. They just never see you. So it's not like they're trying to push you away. It's just you never get in front of them. And I think, you know, things like the For Art's Sake show, that helps to give us visibility, you know, it helps to put really good art in front of everyone, especially when it's mixed up with art by professionals, by amateurs who are, you know, have other kinds of day jobs and all the rest of it, and people who are working in Participate. You know, everything is on a sort of level playing field, and people can judge for themselves, you know, which the pieces are that they really like, which are the great pieces, which are the ones they want to take home.
According to Peter Schneider, who coordinates the show on Participate Australia's side, it's not just the participants who benefit from For Art's Sake.
It's lovely to see that all the artists that we are engaging in this project are really coming to the table with this, and they're really supporting the creation of this collaborative process in a way that we never anticipated before. Most of these artists have no previous experience of working with a person with a disability, and so their learning is just as important as the learning of the person with a disability. One of the things that we people who don't have a disability quite often don't appreciate is that the way we access something, the way we express and perceive something, is different to the way that a person with an intellectual disability accesses something or perceives something. And so you find often that artists who are collaborating, their style is recognizable in the artwork that they create, but the content is driven very much by the person with a disability.
That's something Gretel Corey would agree with.
I've enjoyed the experience of working with somebody else's practice and interests. I haven't ever really played around with the ideas of fruit and nature specifically and, like, you know, creating fruit forms, but it's been really fun. I've really enjoyed the process of us taking both of our practices and, like, creating one piece with them.
And of course, the whole initiative results in the creation of some seriously good and really unique art.
As an example, Jody Bruin, the celebrated Indigenous artist, created a piece of work with one of our participants a couple of years ago. And Jody Bruin's style is very recognisable. And the piece that they created together is extremely recognisable as a Jody Bruin piece, but it's got this element in there that the participant brought into the painting that gave the painting a very distinctive point of differentiation from all the other works that Jody Bruin's created. And so the person who actually purchased that artwork has a very unique piece of art. They have a Jody Bruin, which, you know, is a respected artist, but it's the only piece of art that Jody Bruin's ever created in collaboration with another person, and then it's a person with a disability. So it's got a really special edge to it. You look at the painting and you know instantly this is a Jody Bruin, then you look at it again and say, but there's something that's totally different in it as well.
I asked Colin if there's anything different about judging an art prize like this one.
Probably one of the most difficult things I and my fellow judges will have is choosing one participant work against another work. It will have to be pointed out to us which is which, because the work stands up on its own merits anyway. So that sense of what's been poured in, the content of a work, what a work looks like, it sort of comes through.